The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to The Guardian Football Weekly. Yesterday, a football club that first played in 1874 went out of business because it couldn't pay a debt of just over £500,000. At the same time, a man who's paid £600,000 a week is on the verge of moving from one football club to another one. But which is the bigger story, Macclesfield Town or Gareth Bale? And does it make any sense to connect the two? Could any more be done to stop Mac Town going out of business? Can football's governing bodies do any more to stop bad owners ruining football clubs? Meanwhile, Sid will give us the latest on the Bale deal. What type of player is he now? And will Jose revert him to a left back? Also, does Barry have the Carabao box? There are some long penalty shootouts in the second round to discuss. We'll look ahead to this weekend's Premier League fixtures, answer your questions, and that's today's Guardian Football Weekly. On the panel today, Barry Glendenning, how are you?
Hey, Max, how are you?
Paul McInnes, how are you?
I'm also very well, thank you, Max.
Johnny Liu, nice to see you, how are you?
Oh, very well, thank you, Max. How are you?
Yeah, good. Jack says, about time Liu earned his money. Did you realise there were pod listeners who just don't think you're quite pulling your weight at this stage of the season?
I know, it's early days, isn't it? I haven't had much of a pre-season. It's not for want of trying. You know, sometimes, in many ways, you can try too hard.
Are you telling me that specifically?
I think I'm just trying too hard to come up with the witty badinage and the repartee. Sometimes you just gotta let it flow.
Here's a question from Adam. Not really a question, it's more a statement that he says, the biggest news story is a club who played in the Football League last season going out of business. It's not whether or not one footballer might play for a different club. Please remember that in the running order. And we've sort of, well, I've agonised about this. What do you think is the bigger story, Barry?
You're doing a lot of agonising these days, Max.
I am, yeah.
It's just one quandary after another with you.
It really is.
I'm worried about when the last time you might have slept was. For my money, the Macclesfield story is bigger than a transfer. But I think the reality is that as far as most people are concerned, the Gareth Bale story is bigger. Certainly if you look at the, you know, listen to the radio, watch Sky Sports News yesterday, Bale was the only show in town, really. Macclesfield barely merited a mention. For the people of Macclesfield, it's a huge story. And for anyone with an interest in and a love for football, the Macclesfield story is huge. It's sad, but I feel that, like Bury before it, people will wring their hands for a while and be sad for a while and then just kind of forget about it until the next club goes under, possibly, you know, might be Southend, they're in trouble now. I think there will be quite a few stories like that. Mike Calvin tweeted yesterday that football is heading for a nuclear winter, and I think he's right.
Is there a more brutal reality, though, Paul, that more people are interested in Gareth Bale than in Macclesfield Town? And we shouldn't be so romantic about... We're obviously going to cover both on the pod, and we may start with Bale, but is it just too romantic that the Macclesfield Town one is bigger?
It's just two different things, isn't it? And it depends what your meaning of big is. I always tend to think of football in two different ways nowadays. You've got the sport, which is something that has, you know, historical ties in English and Scottish, Welsh communities. That is an experience that's partly lived in stadia. And then you've got entertainment, which is something that's almost exclusively communicated via screens or headphones. And that on the entertainment side of things, there's no doubt that Bale, it's box office. It gets large amounts of people, eyeballs paying attention. Macclesfield won't and doesn't. And I think that's perhaps one of the reasons why this crisis, because it is a crisis really in the EFL, which is just a structural failing for a lot of clubs where they just can spend much more money than they ever earn, and they're reliant on owners sticking their hands in their pockets to make it work. And a lot of those owners will do that because they're ambitious and they want to get rich, but there's a certain percentage of other owners, and you know, we see them in these stories, who aren't like that and will disappear or refuse to pay, or suddenly their circumstances, as they said they once were, no longer are. So this is, you know, the Macclesfield story is massively important for the future of football as a sport, and also our kind of think, our understanding of ourselves really, and the communities that we live in and what's important to us. That's a that's almost a political story, this sports side. It's, and it's increasingly splitting from the entertainment side of it. But I'd rather talk about Bale. I mean, that's the sad fact of the matter. I've been read about Macclesfield. I've done a little bit of reporting on it. It's terrible, and but at the end of the day, I'm increasingly looking to football for escape.
This goes back to the paradox, I think, that all news media face in the current era, in every era, really, about what people want to know and what people need to know. It's contradiction in terms to the, you know, the phrase news story, because news is something that essentially is objective and people need to know, and story is something that's curated and created for consumption. And, you know, complicating matters is the fact that people do, like Paul says, come to sport for escapism. And, you know, do you really want to hear about a community or organization going bust because of a global pandemic and the clump and hooves of footballing capitalism? Probably not. That's maybe not why people come to sport. But is it what people need to know about their sport? Absolutely. So that's where these things get complicated.
Well, I voted for Macclesfield Town, but everyone else said we should start with Gareth Bale. So let's start with the Gareth Bale news. We can talk to Sid Lowe, who's in Spain. Sid, what type of player is Gareth Bale now?
I like this question, partly because I can't answer it. Because, of course, in a way, we don't really know. I mean, this is the reality of this. It's been so long now since he hasn't played. And curiously, he actually started and played quite a lot this season in September and early October. But I was looking at this the other day, and I think I'm right in saying he only played one game in November, one in December, one in January, one in February, or maybe two in February. And he came back, and obviously after the lockdown, I think only started once of the 12 games that they played. And so you look at it and you think, is Gareth still a really good player? Now, I kind of think he is. I think that when you see him play and there's that sense that he's not engaged, there's that sense that he's not part of it, I think all of those are kind of contextual elements to this rather than just about his quality. I think when you look at him, there's absolutely no doubt, and this is one of those weird contradictions in all of this, is this idea that he's totally disengaged, that he's checked out ages ago, which is entirely true. And yet at the same time, in physical terms, he's still in a fantastic shape. Gareth's an incredible athlete, and you know, when you see him, he's big, he's tall, he's very broad, he's slim at the same time as being muscular. So in that sense, he clearly is continuing to look after himself. He trains very well, and the basic talent that's there is without question. The other thing is, of course, this is a guy that I wouldn't say purely, but a big part of his quality has been his athletic ability. Now, on the face of it, maybe the sharpness isn't there, and maybe that will take a little while. But certainly, as I say, physically he looks good, and he hasn't had, over the last couple of years, this is one of the bizarre things in all this, the injuries which have damaged his career for so long haven't damaged these two most damaged of seasons for him, these last two seasons. It hasn't been about injury, the fact that he's not always been available.
Sid, I went out for a drink last night and someone in the pub asked me what it is that Zidane hates about Gareth Bale so much. And I either don't know or couldn't remember. Can you give a sort of a quick 60-second answer so that I'm not left sort of pouting like a goldfish next time someone asks me that question?
I'm honestly not sure if I can, because at least not in 60 seconds, and not just because I will ramble on like I always do, but more because there isn't, I don't think, a specific moment. There's more a kind of a deterioration. I think there is a point, certainly if you listen to people who know Zidane, that believe that there's a moment in which Zidane thinks that Bale doesn't respond in the way that he wants and basically decides, well, that's it then. And that this is, from Zidane's point of view, now this is, I think, a very benevolent reading of Zidane's position on this, because I actually think that Zidane at times maybe could have done more. But that Zidane's position was effectively, look, you can't have a group of players and treat them, you can't, in a way that not being engaged doesn't treat the rest of the players with respect. And there was a moment in which, there's a Spanish phrase which is to put the cross on someone. There was a moment, it seems, when Zidane put the cross on both James Rodriguez and Gareth Bale. And yet it's also true that at various stages since then, there have been little moments when they've played. And I think it's that Zidane has a kind of sense of the players he believes in, never really fully connected to Bale. I think, but yeah, there isn't a proper answer I don't think there's a proper answer. I mean, it's perfectly plausible that there is something that we don't know. And you know, there are lots of things we don't know, Baz. I think it's perfectly plausible that
there's certainly lots of things I don't.
In this particular thing, that there's a moment that we're not aware of. And certainly, if I'm forced to choose a moment, I think when Gareth was left out and he didn't expect it on Valentine's Day against Paris Saint-Germain in the Champions League. What will this be? Is this two seasons ago now? Crikey, I don't know. I've lost track of time. And then he came on with something like 20 minutes to go. And again, I'm speaking from memory, so it might be more, it might be less. And I think what Zidane thought is that if he is that annoyed, if he is upset at being left out, he'll come on furious and he'll change this game and he'll prove a point. And he kind of didn't. And he came on, he sort of drifted through the game a bit. And I think that maybe was the moment where Zidane kind of thought, well, I was right then. And that's it. But as I say, there have been moments since, so I'm not sure if I can kind of, you know, really pin it on that day.
At least Jose Mourinho never puts the cross on a player, so that would be totally fine. How would you assess his contribution to Real Madrid then?
Well, this is sort of... I mean, I look at this and I think one of the saddest things in a way about his departure is that no one's sad at all. You know, this is just right. We just needed the end. We just needed him to go now. It's finished. It's over. I don't think anyone in Spain really is looking back on this and thinking, oh, what a great player. What a legend. What a pity that he's going. I don't think anyone is thinking that. I think everybody thinks it's at least a season too far, his Real Madrid career, possibly even two of them. And yet this is a guy who's won four European Cups. You know, it's a guy who scored arguably the best European Cup final goal of all time. I use the word arguably because there are plenty of others, of course, that we could argue about. But an extraordinary goal in European Cup final, coming on as a sub, helping them win a final that actually wasn't in their hands at that point. This is a guy who I thought was Real Madrid's best player on the pitch, but not only that, but probably their best player in the back end of the season in the year when they won the European Cup against Atletico in Milan. A guy who scores against Atletico in the European Cup in Lisbon. You know, his the only contribution, curiously, in the European Cups that was non-existent from him in the final was one played in Cardiff, because of course he'd been injured and he only played a couple of minutes at the end. So his contribution has been huge. His goal scoring return is really quite good. But that's the weird thing for me. I sort of feel like no one's going to miss him. And that doesn't feel quite right, because I think his contribution's been pretty high.
Yeah. Would you like us to keep asking you why Gareth Bale isn't getting any game time for Real Madrid, even though he's going to be at Spurs every time we talk to you?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, he's going to get about as much gay time for Real Madrid now as he did last season.
Before we let you go, Sid, can you tell us a bit about Sergio Reguilón, who's signing for Spurs as well, the left-back from Real Madrid?
Yeah, I'm going to say... I'm slightly conflicted on this. And the reason I say that is I really like Sergio Reguilón. I think he's a really enjoyable player to watch. He's a left-back who gets up the line a lot. I think his crossing is usually pretty good. He creates quite a lot of chances for others. There's a sort of cheeky kid element about him as well, not least the way he talks, but also in the way he plays. He kind of goes to you, and he's got guts, even though he looks little and he doesn't look like a necessarily like this extraordinary athlete. And I really quite like him, and there's a bit of me that thinks, oh, this is going to be quite fun. But then there are a couple of elements that make me doubt that. One is whether he's a Mourinho type of fullback, and the other is whether he's an English Premier League type of fullback. And so I must admit, I'm on the face of it, I think, oh, this is great, and I'm really pleased that Spurs have got a player like this, and I'm pleased that he's going to get the opportunity in England, and I think he's good enough. But there is a little bit of me that thinks it's not impossible that this doesn't work.
Martin got in touch to say Sid's insect's weight is negligible compared to the air resistance. This is the cricket you threw out of your window. So they don't get hurt from falling from heights. You, Max and Barry can sleep easy knowing the cricket survived.
Sort of glides down like Batman.
Yeah, exactly. Hang on a minute. I'm very pleased about that fact, but sleep easy is not really the phrase I would apply to that whole experience.
Sid, always good to talk to you.
Pleasure. Cheerio.
Sid Lowe out in Spain there. Back to Gareth Bale. David says, are we to assume Bale is rubbish because he's going to Spurs, or is that, inverted commas, banter reserved for other clubs? This is with reference to me saying I thought James Rodriguez was bad because he'd signed for Everton and it was picked up by an Everton website and it made my Tuesday a bit tedious being yelled at by Evertonians, seeing that out of context. For the record, I'm very pleased to see James Rodriguez is very good. Johnny, where do you see Bale fitting in at Spurs?
I think he is clearly meant to fit into that front three or front four. There's obviously, you know, there's a long-standing pursuit of a kind of a backup striker to Harry Kane, and I think what that manifests itself as is a variety of attacking options that Tottenham have occasionally lacked in the last couple of seasons. The funny thing is we don't really know how good Bale is at the moment. He plays so little for Real Madrid. Based on his international form, you would assume that he has, you know, his fitness is pretty good, his sharpness and his motivation are still there, and if he still has the legs to pick up what is, I think, been quite an anemic pressing game that has sort of dropped off in the late stages of Pochettino and has declined further under Mourinho. If he can restore the kind of the snap and the vigour to that attack, then he could be a very good signing. If he's still a little bit leggy, if he's going to sort of trot around the final third and wait for chances to come to him, then Tottenham have kind of landed themselves with another lead weight up front.
Gaz says, I don't care if Bale turns out to be rubbish. The excitement of having him come back to Spurs is everything in football, and the glory and romance of these moments will be mine, however it turns out. Cue the deal falling through and the inevitable last-minute signing of Benteke. But that, for Spurs fans, Barry, is it's just exciting, right? And especially after that performance against Everton, some excitement is great, whether it happens on the pitch or off the pitch.
Well, it's kind of a PR masterstroke from Daniel Levy. He's getting them reasonably cheaply. I think the deal, should it go through, will cost Tottenham about 15 million for the season in wages, which is a lot of money, obviously, particularly if you're Macclesfield Town. But it's a comparative bargain to other players they could have brought in. I would expect him to do well if he can stay fit. Now, I would slightly pull Jonathan up on what he said about his fitness, in that on the evidence of his last game for Wales, I would say he's a long, long way from match fitness. And then obviously keeping him off the treatment table is important. And I think it would be very churlish to say it's a bad move on Tottenham's part after, you know, we criticised Jose for his turgid tactics and lack of imagination. Then they bring this very exciting player in. You have to say, well, yeah, it's a good move. And if it doesn't work out, it won't have been a particularly expensive mistake. And as I say, Tottenham fans are delighted. It takes a bit of heat off Daniel Levy. So, and Gareth Bale gets to start playing football again while still trousering 600 quid a week. So it's win-win-win all round.
You said 600 quid a week, which...
Oh, did I? 600, yeah, slightly more, 600 grand a week.
Paul, what do you make of the signing?
I was thinking about it last night, whether I'd come out with a definitive pundit-style statement on whether I thought he would get him into the top four or not, and my suspicion would still be no. But I do think that actually, as much as I kind of feel Mourinho is busted and his mode of football is no longer viable, I do think that Bale might be the sort of player that would work for him in that regard, because I think increasingly what he needs is somebody who can just go and do a bit of magic by themselves and do a goal. And Harry Kane is one of those sorts of guys. I'm not sure, Son is one of those guys. I'm not sure many of their other forwards are that type, but Bale obviously is. And if it allows Spurs to look for the counter press and release a guy who then scores a worldie and nobody complains about the fact that Spurs are playing without the ball, then that will work for him too. I think there's going to be ups and downs, and it's a shame that there's not a season two of this all or nothing Tottenham Hotspur, is there? Because it would be the sort of drama that you'd like to see played out in that. But I think there will definitely be highlight moments from this happening. And it's an interesting move by Levy, because, you know, Spurs are losing an awful lot of money, probably as much as, if not more than, any other Premier League club, because so much of their plans have been torn up by their inability to get people into stadia. So if somehow this the Bale transfer can drive a bit of money, then I'm sure there's a they'll have what half an eye on that. So I think it's going to be interesting in lots of different ways.
Jack says, as a pessimistic Spurs fan, what was the best and worst example of a player returning to a former club, Baz?
Well, I was trying to think of a few. Robbie Fowler returning to Liverpool sprang to mind. That didn't work out. I think Jermaine Defoe, not quite example. He went on loan to Bournemouth from West Ham and was brilliant for them. And then later went back to Bournemouth as a 34-year-old. And that was an absolute disaster. And Fabio Cannavaro leaving Juventus after the Calciopoli scandal in 2006. Fans didn't take kindly to that. He went to Real Madrid for 3 years, came back and had an appalling season back at Juventus. I think the highlight of which was him getting sent off as they lost to Fulham in the Europa League, or was it the UEFA Cup, whichever. And so, yeah, there are a few examples. Doesn't always work, but I actually think if he can stay injury-free, I think Bale could be a real asset to Spurs.
It is, I think, a well-established phenomenon that you shouldn't go back either as a manager or a player. And I'm thinking, even though he scored 10 goals in his 31 appearances, but Wayne Rooney appears to me, sticks in my mind as being the sort of the saddest return, really. That there was just, it was so obvious that he was missing all of the things that everybody got excited about in the first instance. And also, you know, once a blue, always a blue kind of thing. How much did it even mean? But a good return I thought of, I remembered, was David Batty, in that he was at Leeds in the Wilkinson years, was a young up-and-comer, but was part of that Strachan McAllister midfield that won the league. So he did that job, went off to play for Blackburn, went to Newcastle. I think he probably played under Bobby Robson there, and then came back to Leeds and was part of the O'Leary, was the old head in the O'Leary side, and went right through those European Cup runs. So, you know, I think that's exactly what you want with a returning star, that kind of there's a continuity, but there's also change. They, you know, they bring you with the experience that they've learned and all the stuff they've got from going on to another club, but they've still got that thing that you liked about them in the first instance. So, yeah, I think it's a struggle to find good ones, but David Batty, I think, is one.
Tottenham have had three in kind of the last three that I can think of in the last couple of decades. Sheringham, Klinsmann and Robbie Keane all came back. Sheringham went to United. Klinsmann went back to Bayern, I think he did. And Robbie Keane obviously had that season at Liverpool. And all of those seemed to work out all right, as far as I remember. I mean, Klinsmann wasn't quite the player that he was. Sheringham, he'd obviously lost a little bit of pace, but he had a very productive couple of seasons. I think it was about 2001, 2002, 2003. And banged in quite a few goals for them. And Robbie Keane, obviously, was welcomed back from Liverpool and continued to be very productive for them. I think the point when you buy back an old player, there's obviously that emotional pull there. But the question that every club has to ask themselves is, are you buying the player or the memory? We talked about Rooney. That was clearly a case of buying the memory. There was no real footballing case for buying Wayne Rooney back in terms of what Everton wanted to be as a team at that time. You know, you could say the same about Middlesbrough buying back Stuart Downing or Tevez going back to Boca. That's the key question with Bale. Are they buying back Bale the player, or are they buying back this kind of golden memory of the amazing player that he was between about 2010 and 2013? Because if they're expecting him to do that sort of thing again, just because he's Gareth Bale and he has kind of the same DNA and the same internal organs, I think they might be in for a bit of a shock. He's a different player now, and if they reconcile themselves to that, that's the only way this is going to work.
Absolutely no recollection of Klinsmann going back to Spurs. Yeah, 97-98, played 15 times and scored 9 goals.
Blimey.
On his second return. Spurs play Lokomotiv Plovdiv in the Europa League tonight. Harry Kane will play every game ever. That's what Jose said. But Dele Alli left out of the squad. A few rumours about his future that Jose said weren't true because he was subbed off at half time. And Ben says, as someone who hasn't watched the All or Nothing documentary, but has seen one clip of Mourinho. Says, can someone explain what Mourinho means by ba 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 ba? Has anybody seen that clip? And does anyone? Because I haven't got to that bit yet.
He's the scat man, basically. I've only seen the clip. I stopped watching All or Nothing after the first three episodes. I intend to watch the rest of them, but I didn't find it gripping enough to. I'm not sitting there slavering on a Monday morning waiting for it.
I mean, arguably, you know, Scatman's best years are behind it. Like that style of music was good for a while, but it doesn't seem to, you know, it just doesn't seem to keep up with modern trends. Other Europa League games of note, by the way, tonight, for the few of you that listen to this before those games, will be played. Lincoln Red Imps playing Rangers, Shamrock Rovers host AC Milan, and Aberdeen go to Viking FK. That'll do for part one. We'll talk Macclesfield. John Bruin, big Macclesfield Town fan, will join us in just a second. Welcome to part two of the Guardian Football Weekly. So Macclesfield Town have been wound up after a judge was told the football club owe more than £500,000. Judge Sebastian Prentice made up a winding up order at a virtual hearing in the Specialist Insolvency and Companies Court. His ruling is set to bring an end to the history of a club founded in 1874, which had recently dropped into the National League after that big points deduction from League Two last year. The judge said he could see nothing which gave him any comfort that the club can pay the debts, and refused a request by the club's owner, Amar Al-Kadi, who'd asked for an adjournment so that a takeover could be completed. He also provided a document to suggest he had access to £1.1 million of funds. The judge said Al-Kadi had been given ample opportunity to pay off the club's debts. John Bruin is a big Macclesfield Town fan, joins us now. Hey, John.
Hello, how are you?
I'm good. A very depressing day, I guess.
Yes, it was shocking, though, you know, this day has been coming for a long time, and at least 2 years, I'd say. Almost the beginning of the end was Macclesfield getting promoted back from the National League after 6 years down from the Football League. That's when cracks really started appearing. Now, as a Macclesfield fan, money's always been tight at the club. When it was a Football League club from 97 to 2012, it was always in the bottom two or three of average attendance. Despite the fact that Macclesfield itself is surrounded by areas where the likes of Wayne Rooney, Richard and Judy, Alex Ferguson and so on live, it's not that rich a town, and it's not a place which is particularly wealthy, and there isn't really a flow from the likes of Manchester United and Manchester City. It's very much living in the shadows, and it's almost beyond the shadows. It's on the edge of the Peak District, and it's a football town, but the football club, in a weird way, as much as it is at the centre of the town, it's rarely caught. It's just a small club. It's a small club, and it hasn't. Let's just say, to run a club at the bottom of the Football League costs an awful lot of money. And when that's the case, you're relying on the stewardship of the club to be tight, to be well-managed. And that's exactly the opposite of what's been happening over the last few years at Macclesfield Town, unfortunately. Amar, the owner, you speak to Mac fans 10 years ago or so, they probably would have thought he was okay, because the club was still going, and he was seen as, if not benevolent, but you know, things seem to be running a little better. He perhaps had better people around him, but the last few years have been a disaster, and you've got over £170,000 owing to John Askey, who is, you know, if not just the club's greatest ever player, he's also the manager that pulled them out of the National League. Going back to Sol Campbell's tenure, I mean, he walked away saying he was owed £180,000. So, you know, you've got a very, very sorry story of a club on the financial brink, mismanaged, and I suppose once COVID-19 comes into the picture, there's no cash flow. That's pretty much the end of the story. And yesterday was very sad for that reason.
Do you hold the EFL, the FA, responsible at all?
Well, I think, just like the Berry case, you have to wonder at what point the EFL or the football authorities step in and say something's not right here. When players are complaining that they haven't been paid month upon month, as has gone on at Macclesfield Town, you begin to wonder at what point the EFL takes any steps. You have a fit and proper person test for owners, and we've all laughed about that over the years. But once someone owns a club, at what point do the EFL start to think, is this person still fit and proper, and begin to look into their practices? And as far as I can gather, very little of that has been done. Macclesfield have been punished. Amar's club have been punished. Ultimately, he presumably is going to walk away having lost an awful lot of money. But that's of his own making. The fans of the club, the people of the town of Macclesfield, they're the people paying for that. And the EFL have stood back and watched and let this happen. And I suggest that Macclesfield, Bury, you speak to the fans at Tranmere, they would all speak to this being a body that does very little to protect the clubs. And especially at this point, we need a strong body like that, because it's going to be a rocky road ahead. The fans themselves, I suppose, are talking about, you know, maybe a Phoenix club. That's very much in the early stages of something like that. The Supporters Trust are trying to speak to the receivers, from what I can gather. It's just grim. It's grim. Many clubs have been down this road. But I think what with Bury and with Mac now, in the past, there's always been this sense that clubs would be rescued and that there would be a saviour to come along. But at this point in time, at this economic downturn, in this pandemic crisis, there's very few of those people going to be around. And those people that are around to try and get a deal like that done, you have to suspect there might be a bit of carpetbagging involved.
So, John, there are people, you know, Twitter supporters of big clubs who will just greet this news about Macclesfield with a shoulder shrug. Can you explain briefly what, if they do go out of existence, what kind of hole that will leave in the community? I've been up there. I had a nice day with you, a couple of pints after a game against Sheffield Wednesday in the Cup. Nice town. Ticked it off my list.
On a Saturday or a midweek, or, you know, or a bus trip to another town, there's a group of people that what they like to do was go and watch Macclesfield Town play football. Now, these fans didn't expect their team to qualify for the Champions League. They don't expect them to buy Gareth Bale on loan. They are involved because of the community and the friendship and the fact that, if nothing else, it gives them something to do, a sense of purpose. And of course, these people have much more to themselves than just, you know, watching a football club. But it's a removal of a club that's been there since 1874 from a town. That's a fairly stark thing to happen. There is so much value to those fans. And to me, even as a, you know, I've lived in London 20 years, but to go watch Macclesfield Town play, you know, at Barnet, at Leighton Orient, or over at Dagenham and Redbridge, or wherever, you're part of your own town, and it's nice to be with people from the place that you grew up, and it actually means an awful lot. And for that not to be an option, you know, as rare as it was, I mean, the last time I saw them in London, they got beaten 8-0 by West Ham, but it was still, at least I got to see Macclesfield Town play. It means a lot. It means it's about community. It's about that. That's why football clubs are formed in the first place. And you take that away from the, you know, the Sky Sports transfer specials, and you know, discussions of whether Saudi Arabia should be able to take over Newcastle United. Macclesfield Town is closer to football than it was as it started back in 1874 when it was formed. And there is a purity to it that you aren't going to get from following clubs in the Premier League these days. And unfortunately, as I get a little older, I've recognised that. And to have that taken away, my hometown club, that's brutal. It's brutal.
John, listen, thanks for coming on, and I'm sorry.
That's okay, Max. Good to speak to you all.
John Bruin there. And that'll do for part two of the Guardian Football Weekly. We'll be back with the Carabao Cup in just a sec. Welcome back to the Guardian Football Weekly. Two breaking stories. The Middlesbrough manager Neil Warnock has tested positive for the coronavirus. And Liverpool have agreed a £27 million fee with Bayern Munich for Thiago Alcantara.
Which one's the bigger story, though?
It's a very good question, John. Which one do you want to leave with? So Warnock's going to miss Middlesbrough's game with Bournemouth this weekend. He's 71. He's self-isolating in the northeast. He will pick the team and watch the match on the TV this weekend. I would be a manager if you could do that. The club are not thought to have recorded any other positive tests in their squad. So, yeah, Liverpool have agreed this fee for Thiago. He's in the final year of his contract in Germany. Klopp's been after him for quite a while. He is a fantastic footballer, isn't he, Johnny?
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's one of the linchpins behind Bayern's recent run of success. I mean, he was one of the best players in their Champions League winning run. And he's lovely to watch as well. And obviously he offers, this is kind of old ground, but he offers something to that Liverpool midfield that maybe they haven't had in the last couple of seasons. And maybe can lead to a kind of evolution of the way they play, which is, they have been looking to play with much more possession, to play in midfield rather than simply playing through it as an option against smaller teams or in slower games, in European games. Thiago will offer them a huge number of options with his technical ability, with his passing range, with his kind of ability to unpick a defence. So, it's a signing they've been chasing for some time, and I think they'll be extremely excited to have got it done.
James says, any chance of Barry breaking out the Carabao Cup box?
I can't, I'm afraid. I am at home in South West London, and the Carabao Cup boxes in Guardian Towers in my locker. I'm not even sure if it works, but I will be going in there later so I can sort of just play it for my own amusement.
Well, like other big clubs, it only comes out for the third round, doesn't it? The Carabao Cup box. Now, some results in the second round. Bournemouth beat Palace 11-10 on penalties. Richard Foster from The Guardian says, could Wayne Hennessy have his ball back if you ever find it? That was quite a penalty launched into outer space. On the subject of Crystal Palace, Patrick says, is there space at Damien Delaney's dinner table for Wayne Hennessy? Could be a good chance for learning. If you remember Wayne Hennessy's previous. And Callum, on the subject of Damien Delaney's dinner party, says Damien Delaney would have his mind blown by Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, which features both Napoleon and Genghis Khan. On big penalty shootouts, Vinucci says, what's the longest penalty shootout you've seen? Hashtag United and Felix Seasiders played a 30-kick shootout in the Premier League of the FA Cup on Sunday. I've done some research. The biggest one I could find was the final of the 2005 Namibian Cup. Had to be settled by a record-breaking 48 penalty kicks, with KK Palace holding their nerve to beat Civics 17-16 following a 2-2 draw in normal time. A number of players on each team had to take 3 penalty kicks in the shootout, which lasted almost as long as the game. That was the bit that I liked about it. Hull beat Leeds 9-8 on penalties. Hamish says, why is Bielsa not getting a hard time from the media for his insistence to keep involving Kiko Kassia in his squad? I think he was captain last night as well.
I think he is getting a hard time. I've read about it. It was drawn to my attention, so... I don't think it's fair to say he's not getting a hard time.
Kassia still hasn't apologised to Jonathan Lecco for racially abusing him last season. Everton beat Salford 3-0. Ian says, with Gary Neville on commentary for the Everton-Salford game, which football club owner would the panel like to commentate on their team? I'm thinking Abramovich for Chelsea when Frank is under pressure. Which owner would you like to see in the commentary box alongside Martin Tyler?
Well, I'd be happy with Delia Smith.
you'd like her to have a sherry, wouldn't you?
You know, I think you just have a tap that was permanently open. You know, it doesn't really matter what the liquid is as long as it's relatively high proof.
All we'd want is Norwich players out of position as well, just to give her the opportunity, right?
Yeah, indeed. But if she went in too early on that, she might blow. You know, you've got to build up, I think, to get it. Hit it about 70, 75 minutes, and I'm sure she'd know how to do it properly. She's a proper star.
Brentford won 2-0 at Southampton. Lloyd says, how have Southampton gone from great form 3 weeks ago to total garbage now? Has everyone worked them out? It's only two games into the season. And you got Spurs on Sunday, so that should be an easy 3 points for you. Premier League games of the weekend then. So Chelsea-Liverpool is on Sunday. Leeds play Fulham.
Sorry, just about the weekend fixtures. One thing I've noticed is Sheffield United, for the second week in a row, have got the plum Monday 6 p.m. slot on TV. So whatever about Sheffield United playing wonderful football, as we all saw last week or last season, TV execs still think that the ball has been hoofed long to Alan Cork and Neil Warnock is managing them.
The new best team in the Premier League, Everton, take on West Brom. United start their Premier League campaign against Palace. Arsenal v West Ham. Aubameyang signed a three-year deal. Key move for Arsenal, right? He was absolutely essential. They kept Aubameyang. He's an absolutely wonderful player. Like, there are so many positive signs coming from the Emirates right now.
Yeah, I foresee no major long-term problems with giving a 31-year-old a massive, massive contract. That's not something that's really kind of that's really strung them up in the past. No, it makes sense for the here and now. And obviously, Arsenal fans are delighted. Aubameyang seems to be delighted. The club have really kind of big this up on social media, really sort of strung people along, and it feels like a big event. But this is a club that's also slated to lose a huge amount of money as a result of the pandemic, and has, as we know, laid off several dozen of its staff. So just to temper that kind of euphoria, I mean, how wise this deal looks is going to look in a year or two's time. That, I think, is going to be the real proof of this this very overhyped pudding.
Although conversely, like to buy a centre forward of that ability, you've got to shell out a bucket load of money first. So maybe that you factor that in with the
he's good.
He's wages.
He's a decent player, and it's a short term move, I think. And I think that's kind of the point of it.
So Southampton, Spurs, Newcastle, Brighton, Leicester, Burnley, and on Monday, as Barry says, Villa, Sheffield United, prime time, 6 p.m. So you can watch the 6 o'clock news, the news where you are, and then the second half of that game, or stick with the one show if you want to. And Wolves, Man City starting their Premier League campaign. As the rule of six comes in for all of us, 1,000 fans will be allowed to attend 8 EFL games this weekend. Not 1,000 across the 8, in 8 grounds. Middlesbrough, Norwich, Blackpool, Charlton, Hull, Shrewsbury, Carlisle and Forest Green Rovers will have those test events.
Sorry, just on the subject of those test events, it seems to have been handled very weirdly, as have many COVID-related things, whatever, that in that clubs were given like less than 3 hours' notice to apply to be part of the scheme. And I think Luton put out a statement going, well, we'd quite like to have, but we just could, we had 10 minutes to try and get our ducks in a row. It seemed very strange. But then everything seems very strange, the way COVID has been handled in the UK.
Luton and Morecambe pulled out, saying they didn't have enough time to prepare. Matteo says, I'm from Mexico. I've been waiting for 2 years, listening to every single episode of this podcast, hoping they talk about Raul Jimenez. 2 years, so thank you. We finally did it. Hello to everyone in Mexico. Pravash says, when was the last time Barry did something for the first time? I could suggest it's we had to record the bit with Sid earlier than the rest of the pod, and you did that without wearing any pants.
I hasten to add, I was wearing a towel.
And finally, Wakefield Neil says, I've just been listening to the excellent Football Clichés pod. I do like Adam Hurry, where they were discussing Max as a possible replacement to Jeff Stelling if he ever moves on. Their view that Max was probably too laid back to keep up with the mayhem. What do the panel think of his chances?
I would never rule out anything with you, Max.
Ah, thanks, mate.
You're capable of anything.
Okay.
Including it's killing.
It's quite a step. I would agonise about that, I think.
Yeah, but you still do it at the end of the day.
Yeah, I mean, just as long as you kind of avoid jokes like, local boy done good when Ndumbu and Sungu scores. I think that's one of Jeff Stelling's slightly more Brexiteer catchphrases. If you stay on the right lines, you should be okay.
There's a goal at Barnsley, John Gwynn.
That's perfect.
But which way has it gone? That's the thing. Which way has it gone?
That's true.
Would I be at Barnsley going, has there? I didn't see it.
Part of the deal would be I would find the worst game furthest away and send Barry there and constantly go back to him when it's still 0-0 and him just going, I don't care. I don't want to beat him. Look, I mean, that is, I would say, a job perhaps technically above me. Stelling is a masterclass of broadcasting that TV program. Well, listen, that'll do for today. I had a nice time. I hope you did too. Thank you, Paul.
Thank you.
Thank you, Johnny.
Thanks.
Thanks, Baz.
You're welcome.
We'll be back on Monday.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.